I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. One of the problems of autism is that its origins are still fairly mysterious, but a more pressing everyday concern for parents is how to pay for therapy for their kids without going bankrupt. This hour, we'll talk to parents from both Kansas and Missouri about the tough choices they faced when insurance wouldn't cover treatment. Plus, a therapist explains the challenges and benefits of working with children on the autism spectrum. Later, Brian McTavish returns with the weekend to-do list. It's Up to Date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Would you go bankrupt to provide therapy for your child if it meant that he or she could have a vastly improved quality of life? That's one of the questions that parents of children with autism face. Some parents are actually doing it. The basic idea here is that good therapy can make such a difference between a kid going to college one day or simply going off to a group home. It's really that simple. Meantime, some parents are fighting for autism insurance coverage in Kansas. Missouri now has it after a long fight. Autism refers to a group of complex disorders of brain development that can lead to difficulties in social interaction and repetitive behaviors. Our guest today, Jenny Witte, is the voice of KCUR on Saturday mornings. She lives in Missouri and is a mother of two sons with autism. Jenny, good to have you here.
Good to be here.
Good morning. Jeff Nestle is also a parent of a child with autism. He lives on the Kansas side, and he's a financial advisor. Jeff, nice to have you, too.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Well, let's begin with your children. Jenny, two of your kids, Simon and Max, are autistic. What are their ages now, and at what age were they diagnosed?
They're 7 and 8 years old. They'll be going into second and third grade this year. When they were diagnosed, Simon was 2 and Max was 2.5.
So you found out pretty early.
We did, which is a good thing.
Yeah. Jeff, your only child, Elijah, was diagnosed at what age, and how old is he now?
He's diagnosed, I think, about 2, 2.5, and yeah. He's 10 years old now.
Okay. Jeff, what did you observe, you know, about your son that made you stop and wonder if there was something amiss there?
Well, you know, I was a first-time father at 50, and first child, obviously. And when he wasn't responding in the playground, he wasn't playing with other kids, interacting with other kids, that's your first clue. And then I would take care of him at night, and I would bathe him and try and talk to him about during the day, and there was no response, just staring vacantly into space.
So something you began to wonder.
Oh, yeah. Did I wonder?
Jenny, same question. And tell us if having one child already diagnosed, you know, made you realize sooner that there was a possibility of autism in his brother.
Simon never developed normally. He hit some milestones physically, but he never really developed language. By 15 months, we thought something was wrong. I didn't know autism, but I knew something was wrong. I was pregnant with his brother at the time. So as soon as I gave birth to Max, I jumped in and we started testing hearing and speech, and it took about 9 months and we came to that diagnosis at 2. With Max, he developed almost completely normally. We had therapists in the home at that time, so they were even kind of dumbfounded because when he was 2, he started going backwards and regressing. He stopped talking. He started to stim on objects out of the corner of his eye, look at lights, started spinning, doing lots of repetitive behaviors.
Even though the first 2 years were a little bit more normal.
Yeah. He was smiling at us. He was responding. He was talking. We thought, great, we dodged a bullet because we do know that this can run in families. So it was really a shock to us. And I just remember my speech therapist sat me down and said, I'm seeing the red flags now. And we just both started crying. We knew. And I got him diagnosed about a month later.
I was going to say, what went through your mind when you got that diagnosis, Jenny?
The first one or the second one?
Well, how about both?
The first one, I knew by the time we got the diagnosis. It was a 9-month process of testing and looking.
At some point, I thought I would be okay. Yeah.
But when I got to the car after the person said, yes, your son has autism, I lost it. I cried for 2 weeks solid. I had to call the radio station and tell them I can't come to work. I can't stop crying. I was devastated because my son was at a 6-month level at 2 years old, and I didn't know if he would ever talk, if he would ever be able to be potty trained. Hmm. I mean, I'd seen all the worst case scenarios, And I was just terrified for him and really sad, heartbroken. You go through a grieving process, and it took a long time. With the second one, I was, again, just dumbfounded, shocked. I thought I would be okay because it was the second time. But again, I'll tell you this. On Saturday, I went to work, which was a big mistake. I got the diagnosis on Friday. I actually fell asleep at work in the chair sitting up straight because I cried.
Right here in the engineer's booth.
Yes,
yeah.
And luckily they didn't let me go. I really could have lost my job at that point. I had to seek counseling. I was very, very devastated by the second one too. So it doesn't matter how many times you go through it. It's just this heartbreaking. It's your child. I mean, I almost felt like I wish I had autism. I wish I could take it away, you know.
Mm. So, Jeff, how about you? What was your experience?
It was devastating, like Jenny says. It was we went to the diagnostic pediatrician, and we got the diagnosis of PDD-NOS, which is a pervasive development disorder not otherwise specified. It's a catch-all phrase. And
so they didn't know what exactly.
Right. Actually, the doctor called him an enigma. You know, is he on the spectrum? Yes, no. It was difficult to say. But it was hard. I mean, and I said before, when I would take care of him at night and bathe him and try to ask him questions and get no response, I, like Jenny, you sit there and cry because you want your child to respond to you. And, you know, there's a happy ending to all stories, too. I mean, we sent him to a camp, and one of the things on the camp, number five, his goal was not to be told more than five times a day, now is not the time to talk. So it's a little bit of a comeback from when we got the first diagnosis.
At what point did you find out, did you get a sense, Jeff, of just how severe the autism was in your son?
I think when you go to see other specialists and you go to autism speaks clinics or whatever it might be, yeah, or walks, and you see these other kids and you say, well, gee, our son's not that way. We also had a neighbor who had a son who was autistic and probably a little bit more severe than Elijah was. So there was a gauge that way you could look at too. But it's difficult, but you can see it really becomes obvious when you see him with neurotypical children and you see the difference in how he behaves now and how the other kids behave. It's a big difference.
How did other kids react? How did other kids' parents react?
It's, you know, parents think their kids are the best kids of all time, and they think their kids are acting great. And we've seen kids tease and such. We have a little neighbor girl, wonderful, sweet girl, who comes over and his friend, and she says to us, I know his brain doesn't work the same as mine does sometimes, so I understand that. Hmm. And we were lucky in the school we were in, Leawood Elementary School, with great therapists, great teachers, great administrators, really hit home the point that this child needs to be looked at differently and treated a little bit differently. And it really has made a big difference in his growth.
We're talking about autism this morning. Jenny Woody, I think one of the things I wanted to take time to talk about this morning was the cost of these treatments, because this was news to me, and I think it'll be news to some of our listeners too. I just want to rattle off some of the available therapies and the price ranges you gave us from your own experiences here, okay? Speech therapy, $80 to $120 bucks an hour. Occupational therapy, $90 to $140 bucks an hour. Behavioral therapy, $90 to $120 bucks an hour. That was for a certified applied behavior analyst, which is particular therapy. We'll get into that a little bit more in a bit. Jenny, add it up for us, and how much does your family spend each week now to meet the needs of Max and Simon's therapy?
I think I had it down there, didn't I?
Well, I think you did. I wanted you to say it.
Was it $1,400 a week?
$1,400 a week.
Yeah, it was a week. That's right. It's crazy.
Just, it's a number anymore, right?
It is.
$1,400 a week.
That's for two kids. So,
I don't care if it's for 19. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. I went back and looked at our what we used to spend monthly for two children. It was over $8,000 a month at one point. That was out of pocket. Now it's covered by insurance. I just have to meet my deductible, which is less than $10,000 a year.
But before insurance, how did you and your husband handle it?
Well, we were fortunate. My husband, we had some stock options that we could cash in. We took a second mortgage on our home. We maxed out our credit cards, which I wasn't very proud of. We had never bounced a check before this, so it was a really hard thing to do, but it was either my son's or American Express. I chose my children treatment. We cashed in my daughter's college fund. We had $12,000 in that. We also paid a penalty on that. That has changed. They don't charge a penalty anymore if you have to cash it in for children. It's kind of great. Missouri changed that. The stock options really floated us through this. We spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on therapy during early intervention.
Hundreds of thousands. And at some point, you just ran out of money, right?
We did. By 2011, when this law took effect, and actually my husband works for an ERISA company, Cerner did not have to honor the mandate. They did not have to pay for ABA. We went to them at the same time that we went to Missouri. It took 3 years, but Cerner decided to go ahead and pay for ABA. So by 2011, if that hadn't happened, we were out. We had no money left.
You went through bankruptcy.
We're still in bankruptcy. We filed a Chapter 13, so we have to make large payments every month. And for 4.5 years, we're in bankruptcy because of this. With one child, I think we would have been okay. We would have been broke. But when we found out there was a second child, and with his regressive form, our doctor said, you have to do something. He was so quickly regressing and falling into this autism. If we didn't do something now and do this early intervention, he would just keep going. And he was severely autistic.
I mean, to me, that's just an absolutely staggering situation that you found yourself in. I mean, this notion of either getting therapy for your kids or having to go through bankruptcy if you didn't go that way, I mean, that's just an amazing place for a parent to be, isn't it?
It was. I couldn't sleep. I cried myself to sleep several nights. I was terrified. What if, you know, this is the difference between my child having a life and not having a life. And I will tell you, it made the difference. And I told them this in Jeff City. You have to do this for parents. You have to pass this mandate. People need access to this treatment. Because my son, Simon, my 8-year-old, his IQ went from 60 to 130 with treatment. He's now in the gifted program at school. His math IQ is 160. He's a math genius. It's amazing. I mean, he has so many skills. Not every child has that. But Max's IQ, he started off with 55, which is just profoundly affected.
Yeah.
And his IQ, he tested at 110, which is high, high average.
Yeah.
And so they're able to function. They're in classrooms. Max does have an aide 100% of the time. But Simon only has help 25% of the time before and after school to help him kind of gather things.
And that was because you made the decision to get therapy early when it could matter most, and you recognized that this was the way, perhaps the way out.
Well, my husband, we had a conversation about this, and
I can only imagine. Just one,
I
right?
Just, no, yeah. I remember this one. It was a pivotal conversation because he had these stock options. He was very excited. We'd saved them for years and years and years. They were finally worth something. We were going to pay the house off. I mean, we were in a really good place financially for being in our late 30s. And he was so proud of that. He was so proud of having retirement and all these things and taking care of our family. We have 4 kids. And I just said, what do you think, honey? I mean, I felt like I had to ask him. He said, well, what's retirement if we have 2 children who can't function? What's retirement if we can use this money and have 2 kids that can possibly go to college, possibly be independent in the future? Then it's worth every penny. And I just thought, I just told him, I love you. I love you more now than I think the day we married.
You're just killing me here. You are just killing me here. What an amazing story. Jeff Nessel, how about you? What was your experience when it came to having the financial aspect of having to deal with all this?
Well, like Jenny, we had a choice to make, and Elijah was not as profoundly autistic as her child was. She's told me. So we had an option. We went to occupational therapy, playtime therapy, used a variety of different therapies that were covered by insurance that we had co-pays on. And Elijah has really been truly helped by everybody who has worked with him. I mean, Hillary Clinton got a lot of grief for It Takes a Village. But from everyone, from the therapists in the schools, to the teachers, his parent worked with him, they all have moved him forward. And, we had a battle with an occupational therapist bill that we had with United Healthcare.
A terrific battle, I should point out,
yeah.
Right?
And it went on for a year. And finally, they paid, but they didn't pay, actually. My company paid. It was the ERISA program. And we went to a final appeal, and they paid. But the final denial from UnitedHealthcare came from a gastric bypass surgeon who hadn't practiced in a year and said, sorry for the quote here real quickly, there was a lack of evidence in the conclusions of the medical literature that this therapy results in improved long-term outcome for patients. This was a gastric bypass surgeon saying this. Yeah. And even at that point, my company, HR department, said, okay, we'll pay. We'll cover it.
No kidding. Again, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking about kids with autism. We're talking about treatment for kids with autism. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888, our email address, UpToDate@kcur.org. You can also tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Well, I guess the we're talking about money here and the cost of all this, and I guess the conversation now changes a little bit, Jenny, because in 2008, you and four other Missouri moms of kids with autism began visiting our General Assembly in Jefferson City. What was your goal? What did you want to do?
Well, there were five of us that did it regularly, but there were moms from all over. It's hard for them to get away from their family situations. Our goal was to get autism treatments paid for, just like any other a stroke patient gets the same treatment paid for 100% by
insurance.
Insurance cover autism.
Basic stuff here.
Yes. Basic therapy, speech therapy, occupational therapy, not just ABA. ABA is great and it's talked about a lot, but speech therapy is just basic to help a child learn to talk.
Why was there even an issue with this? And I'm wondering, why was it an issue?
My insurance said it was educational. They were really dumping it a lot on the schools to take care of this therapy for so many years.
Saying
our country.
The insurance company shouldn't pay for it. Schools should pay for
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm. And when they told me my son had autism when he was 2 years old, I sat down and said, oh, great. All right. We need speech therapy, occupational therapy, behavioral therapy, and he needed physical therapy. He had some physical issues. I said, let's go. I'm so glad I have insurance. Thank God I have insurance. And they said, you need to sit down. And they said, insurance doesn't cover autism. And I said, but isn't it a neurological issue? No, they classify it as a mental illness, and they say that it's an educational issue. They say that the therapies aren't proven to help autism, which is so not true. There's so many studies to back up therapy.
So you had a real battle on your hands. I'm guessing the insurance lobby in Jeff City didn't want to pick up this extra coverage, right, because of the cost, obviously.
Oh, the insurance lobby, no. They were trying to say things that it was going to cost up to 20% per month in premium increases. And in fact, it only costs 0.16%, less than 1%.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, having covered the General Assembly for so many years, the learning curve for the lawmakers must have been fairly steep, because I certainly didn't understand. I've worked not directly with you for many years, but near enough. I didn't know what you've gone
they
through
didn't
here.
Know.
They wouldn't have any clue,
no.
right?
No. And I think once – and I have to say from Missouri, once we educated the lawmakers what is autism, we let them know it is treatable and this is what we're asking for. It took 3 years, but they were very receptive to it, and it really helped. We had a senator – Eric Schmidt had a son with autism, so
he helped
us.
A lot in this battle.
Oh my goodness!
We should point that out here. Yeah.
There was another representative. Scharnhorst had a grandson who had passed away with a seizure disorder. He had autism as well. So
that helps a lot when you have a couple lawmakers who are sort of in the game with you there a little bit.
Yeah, and so I think understanding that they have a large learning curve was part of the issue. We understood that right away. They don't even know what autism is necessarily. I didn't know what it was. Before my sons.
How unusual is it these days, either Jeff or Jenny, for a state not to cover autism? Is it unusual or is it not?
There are 33 states now cover autism.
Now mm-hmm. cover it, okay.
Mm-hmm. Washington, D.C. just passed, they just announced it this month, in July.
And turning the conversation to you, Jeff, you live on the Kansas side. Kansas does not cover autism. That's one of the 17 states, I guess.
Correct.
That's still out here.
Right. They don't cover it. It's been a 4-year battle. Mike Wasmer started for Kate's Law, which was his daughter. And I went and lobbied in Topeka with Mike and people from Autism Speaks to try and get some sort of bill passed. It was always defeated in committee. And finally, the person who held it up in committee all the time was defeated. And so I thought maybe this is the year they get it done. And what has passed is a pilot program in Kansas, which means if you're a state employee, your insurance will cover it. And
if you're a state employee.
Right.
Which
only,
you are not.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they did the cost analysis, and it was, I think, 31 cents per person per month. That's all it was in terms of premium raise. And so they did the pilot program. It has been renewed for
state. So $3 a year is what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's nothing. And the cost to the state, if these kids aren't treated and aren't given therapy later on, is like $2.3 million per child. I mean, it's an outrageous sum. And again, you just have to be looking forward to say, what do you want to do? You want to help these kids now, or you want to wait and pay a huge bill down the road?
Well, and one of our lawmakers from our own Kansas City metro area is the Speaker of the House. His name is Ray Merrick. He's from Stillwell, I believe.
Yes.
And he has laid down the gauntlet and said, while he is Speaker, an insurance mandate for autism will not pass. Why is he saying that? What's his concern?
His concern is he wants some sort of compromise worked out with the insurance companies and the people, but as pushing the bill. But it's been 4 years, and they have worked and worked and worked to compromise, and it hasn't been done. And you know, you have to ask Ray Merrick why he doesn't want it passed.
We have a couple of therapists around our table here this morning. We're going to get to them in just a moment. But first, we have some questions from listeners at 816-235-2888. Again, our email address, UpToDate at KCUR.org. You can also tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. Let's go to David from Independence. David, you're on UpToDate. Good morning.
Yes. My question is, if you don't have the money, what do you do? I've got a son that's been diagnosed by three doctors, but the school system just won't help. He's got Asperger's, autism with Asperger's, and it's painful to watch him try and learn.
Well, Jenny, you've been down this road. If you don't have the money, what do you do?
There's Medicaid, if you qualify for that. It depends on which state you're in, really does. Missouri has waivers. Kansas also have. What state are you in?
We're in Missouri.
Independence.
Just, we've gone through the advocate system.
It's just really hard to fight the school district. We actually hired a lawyer and an advocate just to get the very basic services from our school district. And I don't know, you know, if you don't have insurance that covers it, it really is. You're limited to your.
Yeah. I'm confused. Why wouldn't insurance cover it for David, who now lives in Missouri, because the mandate has passed?
If he has insurance, he may have insurance through an ERISA company, which is only subject to federal mandates. Many companies like Children's Mercy, they volunteered to cover it, but they didn't have to. They're an ERISA company. Hallmark refuses to cover children with autism. They are an ERISA company.
My business is headquartered out of Memphis, and it goes by a different policy.
One thing you can do is you can we petitioned our company. My husband works for Cerner. I actually wrote the CEO, Neil Patterson, and he personally saw to it that we got coverage. So you can petition your company. You can ask them to do it.
Okay.
And it was surprising how successful we were.
Becoming an activist is what you're talking about here, Jenny.
You have to really advocate.
You got to speak out on behalf of yourself.
Let them know. Cerner didn't know this was a problem. Neil Patterson didn't know. And once we brought it to light, he said, well, yes.
Okay. David, I wish you all the best. Good luck.
Great show.
Bye-bye. Thanks. Susan from Kansas City North. Susan, you're on UpToDate. Good morning.
Hi. I'm like Dave. My daughter is either high-functioning autism or she's got Asperger's. She's not left-brained at all. She's completely right-brained. We have had no help from our insurance. We have no help from our school district, which is notorious. I live in Kansas City North. Everything I've obtained for her, I've had to fight for. She's been bullied since second grade because her teacher didn't believe she had ADHD because she could focus when she was watching a movie. Well, she learns via visual and auditory both. And so I've pulled her out of school this year. She's in eighth grade, and I'm going to homeschool her. But it's so frustrating. I read everything I can. I was an RN. I stay home with her, and she is functioning as high as she does because of, you know, what I've done for her. But I'm worn out. I'm just worn out.
Susan, I'm hearing your pain coming through the phone lines here. What thoughts might either of you have, Jeff or Jenny, for our friend Susan.
Well,
here.
Susan brings up a good point. We did pass an insurance mandate in Missouri, but that only covers 30% to 40% of families that are dealing with children who have autism.
Our insurance company says since they're grandfathered, they don't have to cover anything. They don't even cover immunizations.
You know, Susan, I would recommend that you go, if you have access to online, that you Google the Insurance Commission, the Missouri Insurance Commission. We have had some trouble with insurance companies falsely denying claims. Aetna was fined $1.5 million for not covering treatments they were mandated to cover. So you check with the Missouri Insurance Commission, and they'll be able to help you determine whether your insurance company or with your work should be covering it or not.
Susan, hang on a second. Jeff or Jenny, are the insurance commissioner offices in both Kansas and Missouri, are they helpful? Are they going to speak out and advocate for someone, parents with kids with autism, or are they going somewhere else?
In Missouri, they've been very, very proactive. We met with them. They met with all the insurance companies and laid it out and said, listen, folks, this is what we're mandating. This is what we require. In Jeff City, I went to two different meetings.
How about Sandy Prager's office over in Topeka?
She was extremely helpful in my situation. And she, in fact, the office wrote back and said, your ERISA program, we can't do anything with this therapist situation occurred with UnitedHealthcare. However, if something comes up, we'd be happy to help you any way we can. So, and they've been very helpful. And the other people I've talked to have said that cancer has been very helpful to them.
Susan, I hope that helps a little bit.
Yeah. I'm also going to contact the Department of Education Office of Civil Rights, because I don't see how North Kansas City School District cannot cover my daughter.
Again, if you're taking the advice from Jenny Woody, become an activist and speak out on your own behalf, Susan.
I've been an activist the whole time.
Sometimes it's really frustrating, Susan. Hang in there.
Yeah.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Bye.
Joe from Kansas City, Missouri. Joe, good morning. You there, Joe? Okay, let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll turn our conversation to the therapist angle with all of this. Dan Matthews and Keenan Stump are here. We'll talk about what therapists can do with children with autism. And Jenny Woody, it is awfully hard to host a program when I have a lump of the size of a boulder in my throat. Thanks a lot for that.
Thanks, Steve.
The last half hour. You're listening to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. We'll be right back after a break. Back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's conversation with Jackson County Executive Mike Sanders, our look at violence on Kansas City buses, or the latest edition of A Fan's Notes, you can find those in all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. A bizarre love story starts at 10,000 feet, and some surfers get in too deep with drug smugglers. Tomorrow on the program, our independent foreign and documentary film critics look at these plots and more as they review what's on area screens. Well, this hour we're talking about children with autism. We just spent the first half hour talking with a couple of parents of kids with autism, Jenny Woody, Jeff Nessel. We're going to turn now to the therapist side of the equation. I want to introduce a couple of therapists who work with children with autism. Dan Matthews is the founder of Summit Behavioral Services, and he's a certified and board-licensed applied behavior analyst. Dan, nice to have you.
Thanks. Good morning.
It's a lot of big words.
Yeah.
Keenan Stump's also here. He's a speech-language pathologist and founder of New Balloon Therapy Services. Good to have you, Keenan. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Well, I'm not sure we can do justice to all the work that you two do, but I'd like to give our listeners some sense of the types of therapies available for those dealing with autism. We'll have links to various resources for our listeners to find out more on our website. That's kcur.org. But I want to start with the fact that you both stress how important it is for the entire family to be part of the therapy process. Dan, why is that?
Well, therapy is only good when the therapist is applying it, if no one else is around to learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
And so Keenan and I both are big fans of having participation from families because they're the ones who are there with the child 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
And I'm guessing, Keenan, it helps family members develop more of a sense of buy-in when they're also engaged in the therapy process?
Yeah, absolutely, and it helps to generalize skills that we practice with the family to other areas of the community, so the parents can then offer information to other people about some of the best ways that their child learns.
You know, Keenan, give us an example, you know, of something you might work on with a client and what role the family winds up playing in supporting that work at home.
Sure. I'm primarily focused on developing some form of communication between the family and the child. A lot of kids, when they're newly diagnosed, have tremendous temper tantrums because they have no way of requesting something to eat or drink. So,
and they're frustrated.
They get very frustrated, you know, just as anyone would, I suppose. So what I try to do is attempt different approaches to help communication. So that might be sign language or exchanging pictures or, you know, pushing for more verbal responses from kids.
Mm-hmm. And walk me just a step farther here. You do that how?
Well, it's different, you know, for every kid. But it could be anything from we're going to sit down and take something that you're really interested in, you know, whether that's it could be a piece of food, it could be a toy, and we continue to model a certain sound if we're pushing for, you know, a verbal response. Otherwise, say in the case of a picture exchange, again, something that the child's really interested in, something they prefer, we might have a picture of that item there and then help the child learn to give that picture to a parent and say, I want a cookie or a drink, whatever that might be.
You know, Dan, I know you take a different approach. It's called ABA, Applied Behavior Analysis. Tell us what that is and what you do with that.
ABA is a big field, and it studies studies human behavior as it relates to the environment. And so when we look at behavior, we look at the things in that person's environment and how they interact. The assessment part is trying to decide why that behavior occurs or doesn't occur, and then coming up with treatments to improve it.
There's a lot of positive reinforcement going on with your approach. Tell us how that plays into this and why it's so important.
Most of the programs that we implement involve positive reinforcement. We're trying to shape and increase appropriate skills.
Because positive reinforcement is what kids any of us will respond to, right?
Yeah, and it has a more lasting effect.
Okay, and so you use that how? Give me an example of how you might use it.
Like if we see a behavior, we want to increase a child saying please and thank you. We might, similar to Keenan, we might wait until we have leveraged something that they're looking for, something that they want. They say, give me a cookie, and I might withhold the cookie and prompt them to say, say please, or say, may I have a cookie, please, and then withhold the cookie until they provide the appropriate response.
And it works.
It works.
They want that cookie.
It's all about leverage.
I'd want the cookie, too. I don't blame anybody for that. Yeah. Well, Dan, there are two examples of the work you do that I'd like you to illustrate for our listeners. One is acquiring a new skill. Can you use the example of learning letters to illustrate this and give us a sense of that, Dan? I'm sorry. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Skill acquisition and ABA is all about breaking the skill down to something that's that the kid's capable of doing. And, you know, for instance, we have a young child may not have the ability to learn the entire alphabet. However, we can break it down into a smaller skill of learning maybe just one or two letters, recognizing the letter A and being able to pick it from a field of maybe two or three different letters, and then expanding the field and building on that over time using again, principles of reinforcement.
Or sometimes actually leaving the letter A just out in plain view while you take the other letters that are different and push them away just to begin the process of that's the letter A.
Right. There's a process called errorless teaching, and that's where we basically prevent the child from being able to make an incorrect response. We remove all of the other letters and leave only the letter A on the table and ask them to pick the letter A, and, you know, of course they're going to pick the correct letter, and then we reinforce them for it. Hey, you got the letter A. That's correct. Good job. And then we can build on that repertoire over time.
You're building momentum. You're building self-confidence.
Momentum,
all those
absolutely.
Things are happening there.
Yes.
I like that way of learning. That would work for me, I think.
I think I would
take every letter out of the way. That's the letter A. Yeah. Let's go to some phone calls here as we talk about autism, children with autism, and the therapies that kids can undergo here. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, our email address, uptodate@kcur.org. You can also tweet us @kcuruuptodate. Let's go to Jeff from Lawrence. Jeff, good morning.
Hi, Steve. I'm a parent with a child with autism on the fast road to bankruptcy and a profound believer in ABA. And I found how good ABA works. My son was diagnosed at a little before 3, and he went to early childhood intervention, and he went to a little bit that insurance paid for and wasn't making much progress. And then I took a course at KU. They have several that the parents can take for the people that you could learn. They have intensive support provider at Kansas City Center for Autism Research and Training, and they have several categories of that. And I took that course and took it home, and it worked so fabulously well. It's like, oh, man, we got to get some professionals on the job. And then I kind of got lucky and found a program at KU in Lawrence and called Little Steps, where they do ABA in there. It's just phenomenal. And they also have another program for parents in home training called Oasis. And there's a lot that the parents can do on their own with a little direction. And I have to put the plug in for ABA. I feel let down by society as a whole, kind of. It seemed like when he was diagnosed, the ambulance should have came and took him to ABA.
Jeff, I really appreciate the call. You know, I'm wondering, as our parents look at all this, and I'm wondering just how much a parent can help Jeff versus how much a professional therapist is needed. Give us a sense of that.
Well, I think diagnosis is really important. You get that diagnosis early. That's the most important thing. And I think, and Dan probably can verify this, ABA therapists work with teams that usually involve either grandparents or parents probably on the teams.
Absolutely.
And so they are involved in the process as well, too. You work with – my wife works with our son. You know, she calls it mom school. And she works with him every day trying to get him ready for school and addition, subtraction, multiplication. His ability to read was incredible. He's hyperlexic. He could read at the age of 2. Couldn't comprehend anything but could read everything. And got to the point now where he can read and comprehend things now, which he couldn't do before. And it's a major, major breakthrough when we see that. One of the therapists at his school said his brain is like massive islands of knowledge but with no bridges.
I can get a great metaphor. I can get that.
Yeah, that's really what it is. And so we're trying to build those bridges.
Jenny, can a parent do it alone?
No, I don't think
so. Not even close, it sounds like.
But we did have a BCBA, board-certified behavioral analyst, that worked 2 or 3 hours with us a week. That's a lot. You could have one oversee a program once a week, once every other week, and you can hire implementers who are trained for maybe $10 or $15 an hour. There are things you can do. As a parent, I was trained to implement programs, and I did. But I had a professional who was creating the programs, and I think that's the important thing. And schools don't even buy into ABA, so you're not going to find a board-certified, a BCBA in a school district. You have to go out there and find one in the community.
Yeah, as a parent, how difficult was it for you to sort of sort through the different treatment options here? We're talking about ABA, applied behavior analysis. I mean, as a parent, when you first come across this, you don't know which direction to go, right? I mean,
you don't know what occupational therapy is. I thought,
I didn't know what
occupational. Why are we training them to work? This, we're thinking vocation this early. I had no idea it had to do with motor skills. And I didn't know. You don't know. You Google. You buy books.
Talk to parents.
I talk to parents. That was my – and I lead a support group at North Kansas City Hospital once a month, just talking to rookies, I call them newbies, about what these therapies are. They don't know, and it's so much, so fast. I would say to a parent, slow down, take your time. Early intervention is important, but I just
that
started –
That doesn't mean tomorrow.
Yeah. It took me a year to set up my first sense program all the way. We started off with 2 hours a week. We upped it to 5. We upped it to 10, and we ended up with a 35-hour program.
And Jeff Nessel, do I understand that you and Jenny took different paths here when it came to the therapy approaches that the road you went down there?
Yeah, that would be correct. Jenny that went to ABA, but again,
you didn't go that way. Why?
Cost. Quite honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Quite honestly, it was cost. And there's not a moment, you know, you'll go think you speak to your son. You go, well, maybe perhaps if we had done that, would he be more further along than he is right now? You know, you have that in the back of your mind, always, always. But the spectrum is so wide for autism. Jenny's children were really, in terms of the spectrum, very high on the spectrum, where Elijah really wasn't. He was, like you say, that enigma. But obviously, if we could afford it or we had the insurance, there's no doubt in the world we would have done ABA therapy.
You know, Dan Matthews with Summit Behavioral Services, how do you coach parents on these huge questions that you guys are facing?
Well, I mean, I think parents have to make that call themselves. I always advise them, you know, you can only do what you can do. You can't bite off more than you're able to handle.
Mm-hmm.
And there are plenty of things that we can do that don't cost, you know, $1,500 a week. You know, I consider myself as much a trainer of parents as I do of kids. I work with parents.
That's interesting.
Every bit as much.
Keenan Stump with New Balloon Therapy Services. How do you approach this question?
Very similarly, and it's been my experience that the parents are the experts. So I think that they're shocked sometimes when I will show up at their house and we'll sit down and think about something to work on or a goal that they might set for themselves that you could measure in a few months. And, you know, the first question is usually from me, like, well, what should I do? You know, and that usually starts the conversation to let them know this has to be a creative process and we're in this together. So without that input from parents, I feel like it's very difficult to give goals to kids that, you know, they'll actually use.
Stacy from North Kansas City. Stacy, you're on Up to Date. Our topic today, children with autism. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I have two boys with autism. I've actually met Jenny a couple times at some ASA lunches. So, and I didn't know that actually she had gone to Congress for that, so I want to thank her for that.
Oh, thanks, Stacy.
Yeah. My children currently, the only therapy they're really receiving is at school. And I received a call from the Missouri Regional Center several months ago that I had been taken off the waiting list, and I had funding available for therapies, but it feels like since then I have been completely dropped off their radar. I have heard nothing from them. Does anybody have any advice on how I can get them to pay attention again?
What should Stacy do?
Do you have a service coordinator through the regional center?
I think so, yes.
That's the first contact you need to make. Okay. I've actually had to go to the regional center in person. I'm not sure if you're with the county or with the regional center to get help. Sometimes it is hard. The caseworkers are pretty overwhelmed,
And
it is easy to get lost in the cracks. So I would definitely try to contact your caseworker, to find out who that is. If they don't answer you within a day, find out who their supervisor is. Just call the main number and say, I need to talk to somebody about my case. I have funding that I would like to use.
All right.
Because I really would like to get them from ABA.
Sure.
All right. Thank you.
Just real quickly, gentlemen, Dan or Keenan. Keenan, if parents are looking for some support out there, where can they go?
I think that the parent networks, so the Autism Society, the Heartland, for example, or some of the local Autism Speaks chapters, parents tend to learn more from parents, and then they pass that information on to me. So I would say your first call should be to someone like Jeff or to Jenny or to search the web and find when some of those meetings happen.
All right. I want to thank Jeff Nessel, Jenny Woody, parents of children with autism. Thank you so much for sharing your stories. What
thank
a great
you.
Way
Thanks
to spend some time
us.
Here. You bet. I also want to thank Dan Matthews with Summit Behavioral Services and Keenan Stump with New Balloon Therapy Services. Thank you both for coming in and talking today.
Thank you.
All right.